Welcome to Flower Farmer Forum, the podcast where growing and selling cut flowers isn't just a dream, it's a reality. With over 100,000 downloads, this is your go-to spot for everything you need to know about turning blooms into bucks. Whether you're looking for a little bit of extra cash or dreaming of scaling up to a full-fledged flower empire, we've got you covered. I'm your host, Liz Fidler, owner and operator of Sunny Mary Meadow Flower Farm in Minnesota. In just 5 years, I went from modest beginnings with $7,000 in sales to flourishing $200,000 operation, and I'm here to tell you it's absolutely possible. But remember, peddling perishable products requires careful planning and thoughtful intention. So let's roll up our sleeves and dive in. Ready to bloom and grow? Let's get started. Today I have Laura Lee from Florally Seasonal Flowers. So why don't you say hello? Thank you so much for being here.
Hi everyone. Thanks for having me, Liz.
Yes. So I can't remember when you stumbled upon my page, or maybe I stumbled upon yours. I don't know how it happened, but I'm drawn to any grower that's outside of, honestly, my zone. It always just, I'm so curious. And then especially when it's an entirely different continent, that's, you know, interesting because you're in Australia. And I wanted to have you on mainly for this episode. We're going to talk about dahlias because you do some breeding, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Yes. So I think that's something that a lot of growers aspire to do because, I mean, it takes time to like build up your own stock. To me, when I see dahlia breeder in someone's Instagram bio, I'm like, oh, they've been doing this a long time. And maybe you have, maybe you haven't. Maybe that's an inaccurate assumption. But yeah, I just want you to tell us a little bit about how you got into dahlias and, you know, what your farm looks like.
So I started growing dahlias about, I reckon, 7 years ago now. We had been renting in town and I came across Cafe Olay, which I know is a gateway dahlia for a lot of people. So I bought 4 of those and they were my first dahlias that I ever grew, and I grew them in pots at our rental. And I was just getting really interested in flowers and finding them fascinating. I was at home with 2 young children and I spent a lot of time breastfeeding and reading about flower farms.
Yeah, as you one does.
Yes.
I bet most of our listeners are like, oh, that's my story.
Yeah. So when I was sitting on the couch and feeding my baby, I would be reading and researching about growing flowers. And so I started looking into different flower farms that were around my area, like within an hour and a half kind of radius. And I found a dahlia farm. So I went to go and visit the farm and speak with the owner there. Her name was Jenny Parrish from Country Dahlias. And she was also very passionate about dahlias and allowed me to collect some seed from her farm. And I didn't know what I was doing. So I was just looking for mature seed. So I wasn't paying any attention to the seed parents. And I collected a lot of seeds from singles and collarettes and anemones. And then my husband, he works for a vegetable seed company, and he grew out all of those seeds in trays for me for Mother's Day. And so aww, I 300 little baby dahlias in pots at our rental house.
What a gift.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. That is beautiful. Not all of them flowered. And then we moved to the farm where we are now. That was nearly 7 years ago. So the season after I'd grown all of those dahlias in pots. And I just had a little patch around the edge of an old tennis court that was on our property where I grew 300 dahlias, and I sold my first flowers to an edible flower farm who then packaged them up to send to chefs. So that's how I got started.
That's how you got started. So you are in Victoria, is the state.
Yes.
You're in. Did I call it a state? Sorry.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So we have bonded over DMs about my fiance. So he's like probably sitting outside the door listening because he's obsessed with Australia. As you know, he's been there 5 times. He studied abroad there during college in Perth, and then he moved back there for like a year after college. So Flower Farmer Fiance, if you're new to the podcast, yeah, he's obsessed with this sport called Australian football. Like I said, he's been to Australia 5 times, like, and it's been a while. He hasn't been there since, I think he went in February of 2020, actually, was the last time he was there. But anyway, so right before, and then now you haven't been able to go back again. So essentially where, if you're, you know, if you look on a map in the US, or of the US, because I know that's where most of my listeners are, but
If you were to compare it, it's kind of like you live in the Florida and he lived in the California, as far as like how far apart of where you're at. So you're on like the southeast tip of ish, right, of Australia?
Yes.
Okay. And
Yes,
is it
that's right.
what zone would you be in?
We don't really work with zones.
Zone. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so how cold does it get at night
Yeah, so
in
we
the
would usually
winter?
get down to like -5 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
So that's probably not helpful either because you work on Fahrenheit.
No, let's see here. -5 degrees Celsius would be like 20 degrees. I bet you'd be like a zone 7. So do you have to put your dahlias away in the wintertime?
Yes.
Okay. So yeah, you're probably like a 6 or 7, which again doesn't mean a lot to you, but I'm in a 4, so you're warmer than where I'm at, but a little bit longer growing season. And then of course, summer and winter, right? So right now it's April. I'm harvesting tulips. It's spring and you're doing your fall cleanup, right?
Yeah, so we haven't started digging dahlias to store yet.
Okay.
And the main reason is not because the ground freezes, but because of the risk of rot. With the soil getting too wet. So the ground here doesn't freeze. We would only get snow. Look, we'd be lucky if we got snow once a year, and enough to build a snowman, maybe every like 3 or 4 years. Like, there's not much snow here.
Okay. So you're probably like a 7 or 8, as I'm thinking about, relating it to the United States, just where most of my listeners are used to. And so, okay, so you'd had those Mother's Day flowers, and then packed them up, sold them as edibles, not the fun edibles, not the kind of edibles that you the edible dahlias. And then what happened next? So that's when you were on your rental property. What did you learn from your experience? Because did you take any notes or anything like with the seeds that the ones that you saved, or of the
No.
300, how many did you keep?
Two.
Two. And do you still have those?
I only have one of them.
Okay.
The other one I discontinued.
Can you walk us through a little bit what you do now as far as saving, breeding dahlias, and what do you look for, and how would someone like me who has, I have about 30 different varieties, how would you even get started with deciding? And if actually we should back up, I think most of the listeners are familiar with how it works, but basically, if you want a replica of the plant, you need the tuber.
Or a
Otherwise,
cutting.
or a cutting, exactly. Tuber or cutting, or you can pinch them, you can take cuttings, you can, save the pinch, root hormone. Do you use root hormone when you do cuttings?
We don't do any cuttings on the farm.
You don't do any cuttings on your farm? Okay. I'm actually considering, like, when my ranunculus are done, when I just pinch them, I'm considering putting them in my high tunnel just to try to, like, basically get more cuttings that way. But anyway. So if you take seeds, it's not going to be the same plant. So if someone is new to growing dahlias, that's how it that's why you got to be careful about with breeding, because you're not going to get the same exact plant.
Yeah, so growing from seed, you'll get an entirely new plant and it will carry some traits from both parents, but you never know what that expression of genes is going to look like. Dahlias are incredibly genetically diverse, so they're octoploids, so they have 8 pairs of chromosomes, and so that means like, 8 times 8 times 8 times 8 times 8 times 8, like you can get a huge variation of offspring from the same two parents. And so it's kind of like the genetic lottery.
So how do you even begin then?
So Christine Albrecht from Santa Cruz Dahlias has a fantastic book on dahlia breeding if you really want to get into it and read more about it. When I started, that book didn't exist, so I have just learnt a lot along the way. And I've recorded a lot of information about seed parents as I've gone.
So let's talk about, having to let them go to sleep. To me, that would be the hardest part. The hardest part. I don't know if there's a lot of hard or easy parts, whatever. Emotionally, because when do you stop picking them compared to when your frost is going to be, or, when the season is going to end? Because you have to let them go to seed, correct?
Yeah, so we actually do it quite differently. So it's not like we're just letting the whole patch flower and then we're stopping at a certain point and letting the whole patch go to seed.
Okay.
We don't do that. So we plant a specific breeding patch. So in that row, we plant the parents that we would like those genetics to cross. So we select very specifically what we want to go in that row, and we'll choose them based on, for us, we're breeding for cut flowers. Mm-hmm. So we would choose them based on cut flower traits that we want in the offspring. So we're looking for things like, you know, a strong stem. You don't want a wimpy stem. We want blooms that have a really good strong attachment to the stem. You don't want a flower head that just falls off or that's like hanging down at the ground. We're picking things based on like a high petal count or the color that we want, or whether it has a desirable trait like a Picotee edge or a fimbriated petal. Yeah, so we're considering those things when we put them into the breeding patch. Even things like plant height or how branching the stems are, all of those things will impact on a flower's cut flower potential. So we choose the specific parents that we want, and we will often choose particular cultivars to be next to each other if we're really hoping the bees will pollinate those two. We don't usually do hand pollination with a paintbrush, purely because of the time that it takes. So we select the parents for that breeding patch, and then we let the bees go to work.
So obviously bees can travel very far, but how far away physically do you have this patch from your other flowers?
We don't separate it.
Okay.
So it's
just kind of one section.
It's the first row in the patch, and then we just make sure that it's far away from our first year seedlings. Because in our first year seedling offspring, we often get a lot of open centers because okay. That's a fairly dominant trait. And we don't want open centered pollen coming into our breeding patch because we're breeding for a high petal count. So we just put them next to a variety that also has a high petal count. And then it means if the bees cross over rows, then chances of them bringing pollen back, at least it's going to be something with a higher petal count. Mm-hmm. But generally bees tend to move in a line, and they often will just work up and down the rows.
That makes sense. So I've never grown any that are an open center, because again, I've never actually grown any dahlias from seed. I bought 9 tubers my first year. Actually, they were Mother's Day gifts. One was a cafe au lait dahlia, so that my late husband had bought for me in 2020 when I got started. And then, you know, but I've never saved any seeds. I've never grown from seeds because I've just had my tubers, and I've gradually built it up. And I had about 2,000 this fall, and I sold, you know, a couple hundred tubers just to kind of local people. But how long do they last? Like, what do they do? Because they remind me of a coneflower or an echinacea, is what they look like. If someone's like, well, what's an open center one? And sometimes they can be more of a daisy as well, or, you know, almost like a cosmo sometimes.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
What is the vase life on those types of dahlias, or what are they? I mean, none are great, let's face it. It's not like we've got, you know, like a tulip or anything, but.
Yeah, so we don't intentionally grow any singles on the farm other than a variety called Merton's Peach Single, which was that first seedling that I ever kept before we even became florally. So I've still got that one. But the reason we don't grow singles as cut flowers is because they're so easily damaged, and as soon as it loses one petal, you can't use it anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have a decorative form and it loses one petal, it's like no one's even going to notice. So yeah, I would say the vase life is going to be like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
Maybe, depends how much you protect it, because if it loses a petal, it's gone.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, because obviously, even if it's not for a wedding or an event work or anything, even if it's just in a little bouquet and it's missing a petal, some customers get it, some don't.
And that's, yeah, exactly.
That's the way it is. So how many do you grow now total? How many dahlias?
Yeah, so this season we grew 10,200.
Wow, that is amazing.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. When do you start dividing?
So it depends on when we get a frost and what other tasks we have on the farm. So usually we start digging, usually in May, we start digging, and it will take us about 4 weeks, maybe 4 to 6, to dig up all of those dahlias. Mm-hmm. And then we start dividing straight away.
Yep.
And so we always prioritize stock that we know we're going to have extra of and we'll want to sell the tubers. So we'll divide all of that first. so that we have numbers for our tuber sale. And then we'll divide all of the seedlings from our breeding program right at the end. Because usually we list tubers for sale, like if we're starting to divide in like June, we're dividing for June and we're dividing into July. So it's probably about 2 months of, you know, 9 till 5.
Yeah.
Dahlia dividing.
What's your dividing tool of choice?
I actually have four. I use four I'm dividing.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. So I use a chisel and a hammer if I'm like trying to split a bigger clump. And then I have two different types of secateurs. So I have one which is like a sturdier bypass kind of pruner that will like cut through thicker pieces, and then I'll use like more of a needle nose, like my harvesting snips. I'll use those then to like tidy up tails or do more fine cutting.
A chisel and a hammer. I can't believe I've never thought of that. 2 years ago, I ended up, did you see the one, and maybe I don't even know what the name of the variety is, but they're the ones that I call Abe that supposedly came from, one of my customers gave them to me, and supposedly, so Abraham Lincoln was a president of the United States. I think he was like the 15th president, something like that. I don't know. In the 1800s during the Civil War. And anyway, supposedly these originated in his garden and have been like passed down and whatever. That's the legend. And they divide like crazy. And I'm like, yeah, there's a chance because they're the most prolific tuber I have ever seen. Like they make 30 tubers and it's, you know, just insane. And so the second year I was like splitting them with an axe. I'm like, you get a clump, you get a clump. Like I'm not even like just give them away. But yeah, that makes sense. Just a chisel and a hammer to start it. And then rather than
usually to just split it in half or into quarters is all I use the chisel and the hammer for. And then after that, I'm using that. The bypass pruners and the snips.
So you have more of a moist climate.
It is pretty wet here. We have a very high rainfall.
Okay. Okay. So then how do you store them in the, you do sawdust, wood chips, vermiculite?
So we've used sawdust in the past and now we use potting mix.
Okay.
Which, do you call it potting mix or do you call it compost?
So they're two different things. So potting mix would be what I would consider potting mix is soil that has some nutrients in it to start a plant. Compost is typically more like almost like a fertilizer, adds nutrients back in. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. No. Yeah. So potting mix is what we would call. So like a soil based medium. Yep. We did use sawdust for a number of years purely because it was more economical and I could find it for free.
Yeah.
However, I found that it was really inconsistent how wet it was. And so I was concerned about tubers rotting in that medium. And then sometimes it would get really hydrophobic and then it was really hard to get it to the right level of moisture again. So I just found it wasn't as consistent. Whereas the potting mix, it's much easier to keep a consistent a level of moisture, and we just order that in by the pallet now during storage season.
So I use saran wrap, which is like the plastic cling wrap, which I don't love. Like I hate using more plastic than I need to, like in anything, but we have such dry winters here. It's just so dry. I'm in the middle of Minnesota in the northern part of the US and north central US basically, and like couple hours from Canada, and it's so dry that, you know, sometimes if I didn't have the saran wrap, like I know a lot of people in my state that they'll have a humidifier to add humidity to the air because it's just so cold and they can shrivel up so easily. So it's just knowing your climate. So that makes sense that, will they start rooting that out at all? But as long as you have the temperature okay, they're fine, I suppose.
Yeah, they can. So we do have just a temperature control just to monitor the temperature in the storage room, but we can't heat it unless we put an external heater in there. But we do have a commercial fan that's in there for airflow. And that actually helps us because our climate is quite moist. When you dig the tubers, they still have some soil on them. We don't wash our tubers on the farm. We just dig them, leave some soil on them in whole clumps until we're ready to divide. And then as we divide them, by that stage, the soil is starting to dry and it kind of crumbles off them. So we never wash our tubers at all. And then after we divide them, that's when we'd put them into crates with the potting mix on top. But before that, when they're just in whole clumps, they don't have any medium on them aside from the soil when they're dug up. And yeah, so I find even that amount of soil from the paddock actually can cause mold inside the shed. So that's why we've put the commercial fan in there, because that will help to, we need to dry out that space a little more, but we want the fan to kick off if the temperature gets too cold, because we don't want them to freeze and we don't want it to pump air from outside into our shed and kill our tubers. So it just, yeah, it will turn off if it gets too cold. And then, yeah, we just monitor the moisture level in the potting mix in those crates once we've divided. Sometimes we have to add more moisture to those, and we just do that with a watering can. Yeah. And then sometimes they can start to root or, like, you know, start to warm up. But usually for us, like, because we're shipping in like September, October, it's still cool enough that they aren't usually sprouting very much. And we want to send them to the customer when they can tell it's going to grow. So we do want to send them with like a visible eye.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So sometimes we'll move them in front of a window to make them warm up so that they do have an eye.
Let's go back to the seed saving part. So you have a section that you're like, all right, these we are intentionally trying to breed. We want more of these genetics. We'll let these go to seed, hopefully cross-pollinate each other. What does the process look like for saving that? I've never done it. So seed saving for beginners for dahlias. I've saved zinnia seeds before. I've saved other seeds before, but you know, as far as laying them out, how do you dry them? Where do you store them? Just pretend like I am a total newbie, which I am.
Yeah. So we find that if we sometimes do cut from that row, but after Valentine's Day, like the 14th of Feb, we have to stop, because otherwise the season won't be long enough for the seed to mature. So we find here that we need about 8 weeks for the seed to mature on the plants. So that's quite a long time for that seed to mature. So it just wouldn't work for us if we were trying to also harvest off those plants all season. Mm-hmm. So we leave them and they have, 7 to 8 weeks or something usually before we're starting to harvest some seed off them. The stage of the pods will be variable, obviously, because they've been pollinated by the bees at different points. I quite like to harvest them when they're like a straw coloured seed pod. So not green, not squishy. You can kind of like squeeze the pods to see how firm they are. If any moisture is coming out, then they're not ready yet. But they need to be quite firm and like starting to go more yellow, even a little brown before you harvest them. We harvest everything by hand. So we also record the seed parent. So if I'm harvesting seed from a cafe au lait, for example, I will put all the seeds from cafe au lait in the same, we use an organza bag. So I'll pick off the pods. I peel the pod to check if the seed is ripe. And to be ripe, it needs to be like a purpley browny color, and the seeds are quite plump. If the seeds are still white or green, then they're not mature enough, and sometimes they won't mature. Because we're choosing parents that have a very high petal count, we will not always get many seeds. So sometimes you might open a seed pod and you might only have like two viable seeds. And so it's very like labor intensive, and particularly I feel like my favorite seed parents, like the ones that have traits I really want, are really bad at setting seed. And then ones that I'm like, well, it's okay. But, you know, they might be way more generous with seeds. Yeah. So even though I might have a lower percentage of those seeds, like seedlings, that I'll ultimately keep, it's still worth growing out that seed because it's easier to collect. We probably have like 40 or 50 seed parents.
Okay.
In the breeding patch this year. It's quite a lot, actually. Yeah. So then we save the seed, we'll put them in the organza bag. There will be some chaff in there with the seeds. And often the chaff is still green and has a bit of moisture in it. So I have a towel rack that I just hang those organza bags on so that there's plenty of airflow and they can dry out. And then we will manually go through and count the seeds later so that we know how many we can plan for with our breeding program.
Yeah. And then What do you do with the seeds?
Yeah, so we will store them until we're ready to start trays. And so we'll move them from those organza bags. They'll go usually into like a little Snap-Lock bag or a little paper envelope, usually a paper envelope. And we just record the mother, because we don't know who the pollen donor was, because we're not hand pollinating. The bees could have taken that pollen from anywhere. So we just record the mother of those seeds and then, yeah, put them in an envelope, and then they sit in a drawer until we're ready to sow our trays. And usually we do that, what's that, September, mid-September, we'd usually be starting our dahlia seeds, and we start them in trays. We do two seeds to a cell. It's quite a time-consuming process. But in my experience, like, not every seed will germinate. You could put one seed in every cell, but we outsource the raising of our trays. So we have to pay the nursery for every tray that they look after. And so it makes more sense from a financial perspective. Instead of us having a heap of trays that have a bunch of empty cells where something didn't germinate, we're better to double sow. And then you can separate the dahlia seedlings later. We always plant them individually. And if two germinate in a cell.
In the cell, and then kind of keep them a little farther apart.
That's right. Wiggle them apart. but it's a better financial decision for us, because we're outsourcing the cost of raising the seeds.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, those little decisions. And it's, until you are a business owner of anything, whether you're a flower farmer or whatever, it's like those little things add up. And that's like the experience that I'm entering year five. So you're seven of growing flowers, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And so, I mean, like, I keep telling my fiance, I'm like, I can't quit now. It's just getting easier. And it's not getting easy, but, you know, like, all the things that I have learned and everything, I'm like, no, I finally, it's getting more fun because these little things pay off.
Taking a quick break from the episode to talk about QuickBooks. I used to use a payroll company because I W-2 my employees, because if you're in Minnesota, you know that you can't get away with just 1099-ing someone when they should be W-2 because of all the new sick and safe laws. So having an established payroll system in place is your best bet, and I do it all through QuickBooks. I used to pay this company like $70 a month, and I still had to send the amounts and the hours to them, and QuickBooks just does it for you. It would take me 10 minutes to send that email, and now it takes me 25 minutes total. I mean, there's my $70 a month that I used to pay this accounting firm. So the best part is my employees can handle all of it on their end, entering their personal information, like their social security number, their bank account, all of that, and I don't have to ever see it. So I cannot stress enough how great QuickBooks is if you need to do a payroll. So head to the episode notes, and you will get an exclusive 30% off for 6 months offer if you use my code. This is 20% off more than you will ever find on the regular website. So make sure you use my code. Thanks.
Where do you sell most of your tubers to then?
So I can only sell them within Australia. Okay. And I can't even sell them to all states and territories in Australia because of quarantine laws internally.
Really?
Yeah. So there are three states or territories in Australia that I can't post to.
Okay. And I suppose, is it like the north, or which territory is the super remote one, like the outback? Where's the outback at?
Northern Territory. Yes, yeah. And I can't send there.
Can't send there. And I think, I don't know.
And Tasmania is like the little island that's down the bottom. I can't send there because they have pretty strict quarantine rules, and they want to keep everything really biosecure. And then Western Australia, which is like way over the other side of Australia, they also have very, very strict quarantine rules there, so I can't send anything there. But the rest of Australia we can post to.
Australia. So you don't sell any seeds, no seed packets or anything, you just do the tubers, and then the goal is for you to regrow it. So then you've got this system of, there's a whole row of the ones you're trying to save the seeds, and then there'll be a row of the seedlings that you grew. How many?
More than one row.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, hopefully more than one row. You're outsourcing trays.
Yeah, so we have like,
I mean, what's the success rate there? You know, how many do you think you're
less than 2%?
Okay.
So this year we grew 3,000 first year seedlings, and we saved about 50 to grow again. And so they'll go into second year, and then we continue to monitor and evaluate in second year. In our experience, we chuck like more than 50% again that second year. And then they go into a third year of testing. And again, we probably throw out about 50% again. And then you can release after 3 years. That's kind of the standard within Australia, like our Dahlia Society here. The recommendation is 3 years. And that's what we've done so far. My experience is showing me that 4 years would be better. So the reason we're discarding things along the way is because they deteriorate. So they're actually performing differently than they were the previous year because the genetics seem to be a bit unstable in Dahlias. Mm-hmm. But I'm finding that some of them, the genetics are deteriorating in that fourth year. So I'm like, oh, I released that in year three and then I've grown it again in year four and been disappointed with the plant because it's not performing as well as the previous year. But we're moving forward. We are moving towards a four-year breeding and trial before we release a new variety.
So then they're registered within Australia, or how does that work, or what?
No. So Dahlias don't need to be officially registered. Well, certainly not here. It's just too easy to grow them from seed. So anybody could, you know, grow something from a seed and start propagating it. It could be everywhere, and it would be too hard to track. Recommended practice is that you choose a breeder's prefix. And so for us, we're using Florally. And so as we release things, they all, you know, retain that prefix. So we've got like Florally Pirouette or Florally Kahuna or Florally Fruit Tingle. And so these varieties then will carry our breeder's prefix. So people know that they came from us. And we will also purchase things that have a prefix. And it helps you to work out where you want to spend your dollars when it comes to tubers. Like the Currabulle Dahlias, for example, are bred in northern New South Wales. And there are some beautiful Currabulle Dahlias. So like we really love like Currabulle Moonglow and Currabulle Jessie and Currabulle Sophie. And so I want to get my hands on more Currabulle Dahlias, but there might be some other ones that don't perform as well. So it's helpful for you in terms of like selecting maybe what might work in your climate too. Mm-hmm. Because people in a similar climate might be breeding dahlias.
Yeah. And I'm assuming, I mean, I don't know for sure, but from what I understand of Australia, I mean, maybe the northern parts, well, I don't even know because then it'd be closer to the equator. I don't know. Maybe the coldest that you get there, maybe there's nothing that compares to me. So like your dahlias and I can't get them here anyway, because I can't sell them to me. If I ever come to Australia, can I get some and bring home or will I get stopped at customs? Is that?
I don't know. You'd have to work out what your customs will let you do. Yeah. I've sent seed before to America to Leanne from Cozy Town Flowers because we were able to do that legally. However, they've changed the Australian quarantine rules. So now I can't accept seed. So that kind of fell in a bit of a hole, but it was fun while we were being seed buddies.
And I get why these rules are in place. I mean, as the greater good, you know, we don't want some strange invasive species to come. But at the same time, come on, there's got to be a process for exceptions, right? But that's okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, even things like us trying to get seeds in here, it really is very strict. But yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't actually looked into the exporting to other countries because it's also financially not worth it at the moment, because I can sell everything I grow locally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. People have asked me, can you ship tulips or can you? I'm like, well, I could, but I don't want to. I know, like I don't want to build that as a business model. And it, yeah. So what is your, when you're walking through and seeing things bloom? I mean, I would imagine that, you know, you give everything a couple weeks and then, I mean, if they're a super late bloomer, then maybe they're not on the list or maybe they're, I mean, what are some of the things? I mean, I know you talked about it at the very beginning, you want a lot of petals, a lot of that, but you know, is there anything where you're like, because it's this color, I'll give it a second shot? Or is there any exceptions? Like, is there any, and that's got to be like a personal preference. If I saw something that was like the perfect shade of pink, I'd be like, well, they don't meet any of my criteria except for this one, but I'm going to keep it because.
Yeah, you definitely get fussier as you go. And there are things that we bred and released at the start of our breeding journey that we don't grow on the farm anymore because they no longer meet my cut flower criteria.
You've gotten a lot pickier. It's your business. It's your livelihood.
And as you grow more of anything, like I'm sure it's the same even for you with tulips. Like, you know, over time you would be like, well, I grew this one last year. I'm not going to grow that again. And then you've got a new favorite. And it's like that with dahlias all the time. Like, I have lots of new favorites every year.
Yeah, I describe it sometimes to people, and you know, the hobby gardeners or people that just have a backyard garden, or especially like vegetable gardeners, they do not understand when I explain sometimes when you own it as a business, sometimes you get a little bit callous toward what the products are, and it's just a different lens. And sometimes I say, you know, it's kind of like if you're a baker, the frosting is not food, it's a medium for decorating a cake, right? And sometimes the flowers, I mean, I want to keep every single stem, every single petal, but sometimes you just have to look at it from a business standpoint and like, oh, no. And I actually, today I could tell because my ranunculus are just starting to bud. And I went through and I can tell that, you know, those first few buds are just kind of wonky and they're not going to open. And I was like, man, I just cut them short and we'll see. Like, let's move on with this process. And maybe that was, I should have let it fully grow before cutting it. But I was like, I don't know. Or, you know, peonies, first couple of years, last year I went through and I popped off. I mean, I had hundreds of little buds from that first year, so that I can let them continue to root. And everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe you didn't let them bloom. I'm like, sorry, it's a business. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. And you do, yeah, you're right. I think callous is probably about the right word. Like, you just become more ruthless because you're like, well, yeah. I can't afford to release this peony or dahlia or whatever it is that you're breeding out into the world and have my name on it because exactly. I'm like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I hope part of me was like, oh, I should look a little bit more into seed saving and breeding and stuff before this episode. I'm like, no, I want to come into it. Like, I'm going to ask the questions and I don't know. I hope it doesn't come across as like, I have no idea what I'm talking about when it comes to it, but it's just for me and my zone. I mean, we get maybe 6 weeks where they bloom. That's it. Like, so yeah. Seed saving, that ain't going to happen here. We have such a, depending on when frost can be, I mean, maybe 8 weeks, but that would be the most that we would have them. So, and I still grow them because people do go nuts when we do have them and I love them, but just seed saving and breeding is just not, it doesn't make sense to do it here unless I were to do it somewhere heated or, you know, and then that's adds a whole other cost. And when I have people going nuts over tulips and peonies and ranunculus, and just grow for your area a little bit better.
Yeah, I think, and you want to grow things like as a business, you want to grow the things that your customers want and that are going to be profitable for you to grow. You don't want to spend all of your effort, time, money, pursuing a crop that no one wants or is not as profitable. Like, it just doesn't make sense from a business perspective.
So where do you sell the actual flowers then?
So we sell predominantly wholesale direct to florists. So 95% of our flowers would go direct to florists from either our local area in Ballarat or Melbourne, which is about an hour, hour and a half away. And then we stock two boutiques in Ballarat with bunches, which they resell. And then we do bunches to the public if people request them, but usually we're only doing a couple of bunches a week. So that's definitely not our main thing. And this season we've been regularly supplying a wholesaler in Melbourne as well. So they've been taking like quite a number of buckets each week. Mm-hmm. And then the florist can purchase direct from them.
What's your favorite part as far as like the seeds, the tubers, the flowers? I mean, is it just kind of like, well, we'll sell some of the blooms, some of the flowers, because obviously they're here and, you know, it's profitable, especially if you can have just one source? Or does it kind of, I just, to get so much out of one plant, I'm trying to describe how I'm trying to ask that a little bit more. What do you like better, selling the blooms or selling the tubers, or like what gets you excited?
Well, selling tubers is more profitable than selling flowers, but I love the flowers and I love picking an order. And because our florists are mostly wedding and event florists, they often order via a color palette, or they might even send me a mood board to like pick and match. I love that. I mean, it's more work, but it's really fun to just like go through the patch and be like, these ones at the moment. Because you know how dahlias can change color a bit during the season? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I can be like, oh, these are like the perfect match for that color palette right now. Or I can even pick them some first year seedlings that we wouldn't normally put in an order. But I'm like, oh, but they match this color palette so well. Mm-hmm. So I have to put them in this bucket. Yeah, so I find that really satisfying. And I love taking photos of those buckets. And yeah, just I love color harmony, I think, is what really appeals to me.
Do you take your own photos for the most part? on Instagram, or do you have?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, either me or one of my staff, Hannah. So it's usually me, but if I'm in a photo, Hannah will have taken it.
I need to get better about taking better photos. But like even today with my tulips, I was like, okay, keep going. Like I never stopped to document it. But I mean, obviously that is a part of your job. Because you're selling the tuber. You need to document the whole, you know, the whole process. But you do such a good job on that. I want to compliment you on that.
Thank you. That's really kind. Yeah, I think it's something that you have to learn over time. And like, mostly I'm just taking photos on my phone because, as you would know, when you're harvesting flowers, the weather is variable and I don't want a camera sitting out there getting ruined. So it's easier to just, pull my phone out of my pocket. But I'm trying to get better at taking photos of nearly every bucket that we pick so that I have a bank of images that then I can pull from, particularly over winter, because that's the time, like in the lead up to a tuber sale, that I want to be promoting different varieties and getting people to think about what they want to plant in their garden, or, you know, comparing different shades of pink or whatever it is that they want. So yeah, I try to take a lot of photos during the season. And then anything that goes on the website is a camera photo, because we try to make sure that the website is really high quality. But Instagram is a mix of phone and camera photos.
So where can we find you? Your website, your Instagram? Are you on Facebook at all? I don't know. I don't follow any flower farmers on Facebook. So I don't, like, Facebook is where my customer, it's, I don't know. Everyone analyzes their own market, their own buying patterns. So for me, Facebook is where my customers are at that are buying the actual flowers, and Instagram is kind of where I find the other flower farmers. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's true for a lot of businesses that I've spoken to actually in the flower farming space. So our website is florally.com.au, and florally is florelie.com.au. And then on Instagram, we're florally seasonal flowers, and we're also florally seasonal flowers on Facebook. Our business is not actually called Florally Seasonal Flowers, just for information. Florally Proprietary Limited, because we're a company now, but we used to be a sole trader, and that was the name that I was operating under. And I didn't want to change all of my social media accounts when we moved to a company. So so you can find us there. I'm most active on Instagram, and then I just cross post that information across to Facebook, because we have a much larger following on Instagram, and that's where our florists and our tuber sale customers mostly hang out.
Got it. Well, I will put all of that in the episode notes, and yeah, I'm really excited to just, I don't know. I think I need to just keep some. I think I need to just try it and see, like, if that means I'm potting some in pots and I'm moving them. I don't know. I got to try everything once, right? But I mean, I'm never, that's not going to be my jam. Because like I said, it's not, by the time they bloom, like, then I'm cutting it. So if I, don't get them very long.
Otherwise, yeah, our season is probably only like 10 weeks long.
Okay.
So it's not that dissimilar, because we will often get it an early frost or an out of season frost. Which I think is the different thing about us as opposed to like the zones that you have in America, because you have talk about first frost date and last frost date, like all the time I hear people speak about that, and we kind of have those, but I can just have like a frost in the middle of my season sometimes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And if we do, it'll just put a hole.
Probably your altitude is so much higher. Maybe. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. I don't know either. So I feel like, honestly, we should have got Brent down here, because he probably would know. Like, he'd probably, having been in both or whatever. But and just like the terms and wonderful.
Yeah, and like we can grow peonies in our climate as well.
Okay.
Even though we don't get much snow.
Okay. How many peonies do you have?
Ha ha ha. A lot. So peonies were my first flower obsession, like before dahlias.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to have a peony farm, didn't want a dahlia farm. Oh. And things have changed over time. And now, so I have about 3,000 peonies currently in pots, and they're going to be divided and planted in a paddock in the next couple of weeks, which is very exciting.
Very exciting.
And then I have about another 2,000 in the ground, which we'll be relocating as well. So yeah, about 5,000 Peonies.
Where are you relocating them all? On your property or on?
On the same property. Yeah.
Okay. Just a better fit, better spot.
Well, you might know because you've grown peonies, but we struggle with weed management in them. And at the moment they're like right outside the window. Ethan, my husband, can't handle looking at the weeds. So we're moving them a little further away from the house to their own dedicated place where hopefully we can learn to better look after them.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, did you see that photo I took of that dandelion root that was like 2 feet long?
I think I did, yeah.
It was like the size of my arm. I'm like, what is this tap root? But they can get... those perennial roots. So a lot of the weeds don't survive the winter here, but some of them do. And then in the spring, it's like, okay, get it down. But yeah, I've got about 1,000, and there'll be about 200 that I can pick from this year. The rest I gotta leave alone. And then next year it's game on. So I'm excited. I think I have about 40 different varieties too. So part of me is like, kicking myself for that because it's sometimes the uniformity is better with what I do because I'll have 100 customers. Like right now I have almost 90 because I had a few people add on last minute, but I have like 90 tulip subscriptions. Well, they each get 15 stems in a bundle. So 90 times 15, I want them to be pretty uniform. Like I don't want, you know, and like I just started now, I have a private Facebook group for my subscription holders. And it's so exciting and it's optional, but probably 75% are in there. And they're all just, I mean, last week, there were 75 photos of my flowers in people's kitchens. Like it was, I started crying.
So exciting.
Yeah, and y'all appreciate this as another flower farmer. Like I wanted to do this for a couple years, but I was still learning, right? And I'm still like, you grow everything and then you realize, oh my gosh, like I didn't grow that well, or that needed to be conditioned better, or, you know, and I just envisioned my customers posting pictures of droopy dead flowers. And then they're like, well, we all hate her. It's like, go away. Like she's, I don't know. Like I had this idea in my head and I'm like, you know what? No, like I need to know about it if they're not doing well. And my I trust them enough and they trust me enough. Like if there's a concern, they're going to email me, not post a picture on Facebook. Like, you know, they're going to be great. And they are, and they have been, and it's been so great to see them. But I don't want, if I ever do peony subscriptions, like, well, why didn't I get that one? Or I want that one, but I don't know. The more colors, the better. But yeah. Do you also sell those wholesale for the most part? I mean, pretty much significantly wholesale, right?
Yeah, we are. Yeah. So I only had my first harvest of peonies last year, and it wasn't a lot. Like we picked a couple hundred stems. And then obviously, as you would know, with relocating peonies, then you have to wait again. So as we move all of these, it means I'm probably not going to have peonies to harvest for the next few years until the new patch gets established. Yep. So yeah, but we were only selling them direct to florists.
Yeah. And they're a nice fit because you'll have your dahlias planted and then you'll just be doing peonies, and it's a good balance where they're not all blooming at the same time.
Yeah, well, I think we'll be posting out orders of dahlia tubers at the time when we're also, yeah, around that time. Because what for us, it's like October, November, and then we'll be harvesting peonies, but we'll also be wanting to plant out dahlias and all of our like frost sensitive annuals. Okay. Yeah, no, it's going to be nuts. I'm not going to lie.
Okay. For me, it's June, or so around May is when I plant my tubers. So that'll be coming up because our last frost is usually like May 15th. So I try to plant my tubers like between May 5th and May 10th. So before the last frost, because, you know, they take a little while to get
there. Under the ground. Yep.
Yep. And then around here, peonies don't bloom until probably mid June. So they're pretty late for here. And then, yeah. And then usually the last week of August is when I'll get.
Yeah, that's quite a, yeah.
So everything will be planted before I can start picking the peonies. peonies will be done.
Yeah, that's quite good actually. Like, because there is a bit of a lull after you've planted like your dahlias and your frost sensitive annuals until they're ready to harvest. So it's great if you've got something in that patch. I don't think it will quite work that smoothly for us.
Yeah, well,
I can
that's
hope.
okay. That's okay. Maybe. And like this year, my tulips, I've got 13,000 that I did inside the high tunnel, and then I have two rows, like 3,500 a piece outside, and they're only like 2 weeks behind, whereas normally they'd be like 4 weeks behind. But again, you just do it. That's where the florists have to understand that, like, this is when they're blooming, and the customers have to understand that this is when they're blooming, and they do. They get it. And it makes us appreciate them all the more.
Absolutely.
Okay, so one last question. Café au lait was your gateway dahlia. What is your, you have to pick one. What is your favorite one now? Not even. Okay, pick like your favorite ball, your favorite dinner plate. I don't know. However you want to answer that, but I want to hear your favorites.
Yeah, okay. I'm really loving Devon salmon at the moment. It's a decorative form, and everybody loves those soft, salmon-y, peachy kind of tones. So yeah, I really love that. That's been, and it's like, it's a great height. It's productive. It's got good stems, a strong bloom attachment. It's a decent size, and it's reliable. So yeah, that would probably be one of my top ones at the moment. And then usually I love one of my seedlings from the breeding program. So I have this one at the moment that's raspberry, and it has these like white tips. And yeah, I love that. Doesn't have a name yet.
I have one. I gotta think what it's like. Is it Joey Winnie? It's like salmon and the pink. Like it's a ball dahlia that gets like the more color that way. But anything that's multicolored on there just starts, I don't know, starts getting there for me. For me, with my subscriptions and everything, I pretty much my cafes, I had about 120 of them last year, and I'm only keeping 25. I sold the rest of those. Like, I'm just trying to build up all of my ball dahlias, and because that's just what works well with my subscriptions and what I grow. So I used to have these like all these other dinner plates, and I don't know, I just stick with the ball dahlias, and my customers love
Balls
them.
are amazing as a cut flower. And like in Australia, we don't actually have very many balls. Like there are just not many, and most of them are red, unfortunately. So I'm trying to breed more balls, but our success rate with that seed also hasn't been great because, as you would know, they have a very high petal count, and so there's not much pollen in terms of viable seed. So we're trying, but yeah,
Oh, so okay.
balls, more balls are good.
I know we keep trying to wrap up this episode, but I keep thinking of more things. So one last thing I want to think about is here, ours are blooming mostly in September, which is the start of fall for us. And in so picture, in the United States, a girl with her Starbucks coffee and her scarf and her boots and like the fall dahlia colors, like a lot of us, I'm in a Facebook group with, with some cut flower growers and have some group texts, and we're like, yeah, I love anything that's hot pink or watermelon color or whatever, but nobody wants that in September in Minnesota. They want the bronze, the deep hues, the maybe the blush colors, but nobody wants a hot pink dahlia in September. So it's interesting. Whereas yours are
Ours are flowering about a month before yours, I would say, is when we're starting to harvest. So we start harvesting usually in the last week of January. So that would be equivalent to like July for you, I guess. The last week of July would be the equivalent. And so I definitely agree when you hit autumn, fall, that's definitely when people want those beautiful, autumn leaf kind of tones, or like the burgundies and the rusts and the, those colors. But I can always sell pink. I can always sell more pink. I wish I had more pink. We're planting more dahlias next year and we're going to plant more pink. And then I guess because we're supplying a lot of wedding and event florists, it depends on the color palette that they're like brides and grooms are requesting. So obviously we still sell a lot of white and blush and those like cafe au lait, really neutral kind of tones. Pretty much anything except yellow. Yellow is our least popular color, and then purple would be the second least popular. But other than that, yeah, we sold every single stem of everything that wasn't yellow this year.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. You should be so proud of what you've built.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I never even wanted to live on a farm. That's
Yeah, starting with some seeds on Mother's Day. And how old are your kids now?
6, 8, and 10.
Okay, fun, fun ages. Great. Well, thank you so much, and we'll hit the episode notes. And yeah, thank you so much.
No worries. You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Flower Farmer Forum. If you enjoyed today's show and want to dive deeper into the world of growing and selling cut flowers, be sure to check out our website. There you'll find every episode in written blog form, plus courses and one-to-one coaching options to help you on your flower farming journey. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at Flower Farmer Forum and join our Facebook page to connect with other passionate listeners and flower enthusiasts. If you're local and want to see what we're up to, visit us at sunnymarymeadow.com or find us on Instagram and Facebook at Sunny Mary Meadow for my flower farm. We'd love your support. Please leave us a 5-star review and share this episode with a friend who might find it fantastic. Until next time, keep growing, keep blooming, and keep making your flower farm dreams a reality.
Flowers, flowers, we love flowers. Sunny Mary Meadow, they smell so good. sunnymarymeadow.com.